Hi, I'm Malachi, and you're listening to the Judge a Book podcast. Downloads and reviews help us out a ton, so leave us 5 stars before you go. Every single week, join in for our book club where we talk about the books that we love, or maybe not so loved. New books will be chosen every month, and you'll get to listen to exactly how we judge a book. And welcome back to the Judge a Book podcast. We are reading Furyborn and discussing that this week. So for Furyborn, we're reading up to chapter 12. If you've not read that yet, stop because spoilers are ahead and come back and join us after you read. This week's episode of the Judge a Book podcast is brought to you in part by Groovebook. I love Groovebook. It is the easiest, cheapest, most convenient way I have found to get all of my photos printed. I can select up to 100 photos off of my phone every single month and have them shipped to my door. It's only $3.99 a month, but if you want to try Groovebook, use the code Westbrook2147 to get your first book for free. I'll put the code down in the podcast description as well. So if you want to copy that, you can get your first Groovebook for free. Hello, hello. I am with Cameron this week. Hi, Cameron.
Hi.
We are reading and discussing Furyborn together for March. I'm so excited. We've read the first 12 chapters so far, and I'm so excited to get into it and discuss it because I feel like I have a lot of thoughts and a lot of things that I need to talk to somebody about. A lot has gone on, I feel like, already in just the first 12 chapters.
Oh, absolutely.
So I have met Cameron through some common ground on books and social media, and so I'm so happy that she's joining us today. Cameron, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. First, thank you for having me on your podcast.
Of course.
I did get to meet you through Book Talk on TikTok. Mm-hmm. My username is @comingupnovels. It's also the same on Instagram if you want to follow me there. But I basically just post about books I read and just my thoughts, nothing too crazy. Just a normal girl, 24, living in Arizona, just trying to escape reality.
Yes, 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 yes. And fantasy books are the way to go to escape reality.
Yes, they are.
Yes, and I'll have all of Cameron's social links down in the podcast description as well if you want to connect with us. Okay, so let's just kind of get into the book. What, first of all, I always love to talk about the cover of the book. I think you have the hardcover edition, right? And I have the paperback. So what do you think about the cover?
Yes, so I think the cover art is so beautiful and like regal. And when, yes, I think about it, I just think of like darkness and betrayal and action. Like, that's what it screams to me.
Yes, it is gorgeous. It's just like, I don't know, the more that you look at it, there's like some complexity there, but like it's simple at the same time. I just love it. It is definitely intriguing seeing it on the shelf, even without knowing anything about it. It's definitely a book I would pick up.
Oh, absolutely.
Have you read anything by this author? But this might be a debut novel. I don't know.
So I haven't read anything by this author. It was recommended to me by a mutual friend on Book Talk, and she raved about it, and I was like, okay, I have to add it to my TBR pile. I really wanted to make it a priority in 2021. I did do a quick Google of the author. I don't want to mess up her name. I believe it's Claire Legrand.
I think so, too.
And she has several books out, so I'm not sure if this is her debut because it came out in 2018.
Yeah, you're totally right. I just looked it up, too, and she has tons of books. Yeah. Definitely not a debut. Just the first one, I guess, I've heard of hers, other than the others in this series. So not a debut, but I've not read anything by this author either, obviously. But I'm excited for these. And so far, I feel like I am going to finish the rest of this trilogy. I guess we'll see how the rest of the book goes, but I've enjoyed it so far. So is this your typical read, your normal genre, or is this something kind of out of your comfort zone?
Oh, this is totally within my wheelhouse. Anything fantasy, I will read. I have been a big fantasy fiction reader since I was literally a wee child. I've always just gravitated towards the mystical and magical and non-realistic books,
yeah,
that have come my way. So this is definitely right in line with what I would usually read.
I wish I could say that I have been a fantasy reader for life, but up until maybe a year ago, I swore that I would never read fantasy. I thought that,
No way.
yes way, I thought I hated fantasy. I just assumed I did. I don't know why. I just had this like stigma against fantasy. I didn't like it, or so I thought. But now this is 100% in my wheelhouse. YA and like new adult fantasy, that's my go-to right now. So yeah, up until
It's
about a
just
year
so
ago.
nice.
Yeah,
Yeah,
up until a
you could
year ago, I was
just
like, nope, no fantasy. That's not for me. I was so wrong.
definitely,
I've
but
been
I
introduced to a
think
whole new realm of books.
Oh yeah, you have so much to catch up on. I feel the same way though towards like nonfiction. It takes a lot. It takes a lot for me to want to pick up a nonfiction book.
Yeah.
And I'm starting to feel that way towards contemporary, which I did used to read. I wouldn't say a lot of contemporaries, but I would like sprinkle them in, and nowadays it's like it's the last thing I want to do. Maybe that's just the pandemic.
I right now am so engrossed in like especially book talk favorites. I feel like if someone requests a book to me, it's like way up on my TBR. Like if someone says this book's good, then I'm taking your word for it and I'm gonna read it. So, which is so different from the past. I feel like I was reading a lot of nonfiction and reading a lot of historical fiction, and now I'm like totally not in those realms at all. Yeah, this book has most definitely been hyped up on BookTok though. I've seen so many people who've read it that are just like absolutely in love with it. And so I have high expectations. I hope they don't let me down.
Same. I've also seen just only positive things about this series, this trilogy, and so I'm a little scared, I'm not gonna lie, because there have been books in the past that BookTok has really enjoyed that I was like, I will not read those series.
True, true.
But I am also pretty picky, so.
Yeah, I have high expectations. Hopefully they don't get let down. I guess we'll see how it goes. But
Fingers crossed.
yes, it is so hyped up, so it better be worth it. It better be worth it. Okay, I'm gonna get into the summary up to chapter 12. So once again, if you've not read, stop listening because there are definitely going to be spoilers ahead. So these first two chapters, I'm not gonna lie, I was a little bit confused. I'm still not 100% sure everything that's going on, but as time's going, it's making a little bit more sense to me. But I'm not gonna lie, I read maybe the first two or three chapters and I thought, wow, I'm not going to enjoy this book at all because I have no clue what's going on. Also, another confession, this is actually the second time I've picked up this book. The first time, the first time I picked it up, I read to page 50 and put it down and didn't pick it back up. And
I can understand that.
I'm glad we're doing this and reading this together because it's pushed me further and now I'm enjoying it. But yeah, I read to page 50 and put it down and didn't read it again. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding. You have the second book already. You can't be doing this. This is why I don't buy series all at once, but I did for this one because it was so hyped up. Okay, so we start off with, I guess, kind of the prologue. It's kind of a little bit of a backstory to the backstory because we've got two timelines going on, and then this is even further back from that other timeline, so we've got a lot going on. But so we have Riel, it's who we start off with. We've got dueling timelines, dueling POVs, we've got everything going on. And Riel is a queen and she has a baby, and it's like right there, we're right here in the drama, like something's going on. She has a baby, there's a young boy there, and his father is saying, like, he knows about the baby, and we have all of this drama going on. And we find out that Simon is a Mark, which means he has the blood of both humans and angels in him. Super interesting. I'm super excited. I hope we get to see more details of angels because that's not something I've seen a lot in fantasy books so far. I know I'm new to the genre, but I'm excited for that. And we also find out that King Audric, we don't really know in him yet, but he's dead and he's been presumably murdered by Queen Riel, which definitely throws a kink in things after this prologue. Definitely makes things a lot more interesting. And we also
Yes,
find out that
yes.
he is a very strong Lightbringer, which is interesting to me because the third book is titled Lightbringer, so I'm intrigued.
I know immediately I was like, oh, foreshadow.
I know. That's the bad thing about reading books once the whole series is out, like the different names. That happened with Aragorn too. We were reading Aragorn 2 months ago, I think, and I'm like, oh, that's the title of another book. Riel has the baby. She's under this like stress. She wants to get the baby out of the situation. Riel tells Simon to take her baby to Borzval, and we find out that Simon has the gift of traveling. So I guess he can jump to different locations. And
oh my gosh.
Yeah, and it seems to me that he might have the ability to jump between time, but that might just be like a presumption that I'm making. But I feel like it's not just location travel, that there might be some time travel in there too. So Simon is very young. I think we find out he's like 11. Is that right?
He's eight.
Eight. Oh my gosh. 8 years old.
I highlighted it. I was like, eight? Excuse me?
Yeah. The whole scene leading up to there, when they're like describing Simon and he's in the room, I'm picturing him like young adult, like, you know, early 20s, maybe a teenager, kind of in that range. When they said that he was eight, I was so shocked. So he is apparently like super powerful. And he's like looking for an adult in this situation, and he like kind of realizes that I'm the adult. And so he takes the baby, he's gonna jump and travel, and his goal is to make it to Borzval. He has the baby in his hand, and while he's traveling, the baby gets ripped out of his hands. I was just in shock. Like, and we just end there. That was it. That's all we got. The baby gets ripped out of his hand. He's like going through time, like looking forward. I think maybe there's like a string or a light or something he's like aiming for, and then the baby is gone, and then yep, that's it. That's all we get.
Yeah.
I was confused, but I was still very intrigued.
the first preface or prologue, it was confusing because it's a lot happening all at once,
mm-hmm.
but I will say it's not as confusing as the first two chapters.
Yes, really, really it's not. And as we're going, like as we've got to chapter 12, it's some things are making more sense.
Yeah.
But like these first three chapters, I was like, what in the world is going on? Like we literally had three different timelines within the first like 30 pages or something. It was insane.
Yeah, it was.
So here we go. We're jumping. We get to chapter one, and now we're jumping 2 years earlier from the point where we were in this prologue. and we're with Riel again, so we're staying with this POV. And the scene kind of starts, and Princess Runa is dead, and Riel's like, happy about it.
Yeah.
Which, we don't even know who this princess is, except that she's in Borzval, which we've been introduced to. Yeah, she's dead. And she's studying with Tal, who seems to be, like, her mentor. He has, like, a position, I think, within the royal court.
Mm-hmm.
And he is teaching her, I think, about the history of their world. And so she's doing her studying. We find out the princess is dead. She's excited about it. Tal tells her, you know, chill out on that a little bit. And then we kind of see that she is, I think Ludovine might be sick or ill at this point. Someone asks her about it. But she's super distracted because there is a boon race coming up, which, again, we have no clue what's going on and what a boon race is. And here we are ending chapter one. And that's it. So, and more, another info drop in chapter one. We really don't know what's going on, but we're looking forward to the boon race, according to Riel.
Yeah, we get this, like, inside glimpse of what it's like inside the king's court, essentially. We know that, based off of her interaction with Tal, we know that Riel holds, like, a higher place. They refer to her as Lady Riel.
Yes.
In the prologue, she's queen. So we don't know how she gets from point A to point B in 2 years. So immediately you're like, okay, wait a second. First she was queen, now she's lady. What's happening? And she's being, like, admonished by Tal. He's like, you need to calm down and, like, behave and be, like, a proper lady. And she's like, no, thank you. I want to go join this chase.
Yes. There's definitely some dynamics that we start to see that there's something going on behind the scenes, and that, you know, like there's some kind of altering situation in the background of her life. And we kind of get tiny little hints of that in the first chapter, but we see more of it later on. It just adds to the dynamic. Like there, it is just a very multi-leveled situation going on. Like you're kind of wondering how in 2 years everything's going to happen. She's going to become a queen. That lets us know that she's not born into royalty. Like, she's not born as a queen. And there's just a lot going on.
There's a lot. Yeah, it is a lot. And it's 2 years doesn't seem like enough time.
Yes. It's going to be a crazy situation seeing how, like, how far in this book we get to make it. Like, are we going to make it through 2 years in this book or not? Like, I'm very interested to see. The next chapter, we jump 1,020 years. And I'm assuming this is 1,020 years from 2 years earlier. So
that's what I assumed.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. So now we meet Eliana, and she is a bounty hunter of sorts. She's hunting down people who are against the Empire, so some kind of rebels. And we get a slight little mention of the old world and Riel, and that she was a queen. So that was kind of interesting. We know that the two main characters know of each other a little bit. Well, not of each other. Eliana knows of Riel, so she was obviously a big deal, but we still haven't kind of seen how that's going to play out. And then hunting down a person named Quill, they capture these people, and we're ended with a scene where they're in like an execution scene and these children are going to get executed.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was insane. The moral dilemmas that she's going through. She's with her friend, who we find out isn't only just a friend, Harkin. And it's a super emotional scene. She feels like she has to stay put together because he's going to fall apart if she doesn't. And at first I kind of felt like they were like a brother-sister dynamic, but that isn't what ended up happening.
Yeah. Their relationship is, even just in that first couple of chapters, it doesn't feel rooted in deep emotion. It just feels like it has arisen out of circumstance.
Yeah, it's almost like a convenience relationship. Like, they're in a similar field, in similar circles, in their neighborhoods, like that kind of situation.
Yep.
Then we jump back to Riel, and we get to see the Boon Chase, which to me, this is where, like, it really started to get more interesting.
Yeah.
It still wasn't 100% clear what was going on, but it did start to get more interesting. So get to meet Audric, who I'm a fan of already, but we meet Audric, and he's also competing in the Boon Chase. There's someone who has stakes on them both in whatever this Boon Chase is. It's like a celebration, I believe, of, like, the peace in their kingdom.
Yeah, it's like essentially a horse race. Like, people are betting on them.
But it's dangerous. It's not like a track either. Like, not like a modern day horse race. Like, almost like a cross country horse race. They're like going on the hills and like mountains and everything. So
yeah, it's like an obstacle course. They reference multiple times how dangerous the chase is.
Yeah, which is insane that we find out later that Audric he's the prince at this time and the king in the future, and like he is participating in this. Like, but they're undercover, right? Like, they have like coverings on or in costumes.
They snuck out. So in the first chapter, when you mentioned Ludivine, or Ludivine, however you want to pronounce her name, she feigned being ill so it could give a cover for Riel to get Tal's study. And then she meets Audric in a tent, and they literally are like not supposed to be in this chase because he's the prince, first of all, and she's a lady, and they're doing it against their parents' wishes.
Yes, it seems like everything Riel does is against her dad's wishes, though, but, you know. Yeah, so they're in this, like, super dangerous situation. It's just really shocking that they've got away with it and, like, got to this point where they were able to do this.
Yeah.
To me, like, the prince should be, like, guarded at all times. I know that's probably not reality, but it's just in my mind how a prince is.
Because she mentions, like, you've never done anything wrong in your life, you're not a rule breaker, Audric, that maybe there's like a sense of leniency around him because he's always just like this unwavering good little boy. And so
they don't like expect him to do anything wrong.
Yeah, so they're like, oh, like, we don't have to monitor.
They're in this Boon Chase, and then we see a lot of dynamic with Borzval. Seems like they're really not good people, or like good things aren't coming from them, because she was happy when the princess from there died, and then now there are these Borzval's arbiters, and they're surrounding Audric, and like, again, we're ending the chapter, like, super dramatic, but they, like, surround him, and she can tell, like, something's not right, they aren't supposed to be in this Boon Chase, like, this is not how it's supposed to go, and they start surrounding him, so it's odd to me, looking back, seeing that she sent her baby to Borzval, when right now, it seems like there's, like, a serious mistrust with him, and, like, a negative dynamic.
Yeah, something's not right, because... She notices the arbiters show up right before the race starts, and I think from my understanding of the chapter, they're supposed to be from their own country, or kingdom. And when she sees them surrounding Audric at the very end of that chapter, she realizes, oh, those aren't our people. Like, the somehow the arbiters are like fake. What is happening? What is this like treachery going on?
Something out of place here. And we're jumping back to Eliana. Harkin is really upset after the execution, understandably. Yeah. And he asks Eliana to stay with him the night. We find out that his parents have passed away and he's on his own. And he's like kind of kept their house exactly how it was. He hasn't touched anything. Like he doesn't even like cook in their kitchen. So there's definitely some backstory to Harkin. And he's talking with her. They have this like dream of running away to Tavar, which I guess is the last free land, the last free country that's not under the Empire, under control of the Empire, if I understand right. And so they dream of like going there and being free and taking their mom and her brother, but it doesn't seem realistic to Eliana. She's just kind of going along with his dream that he has. She hopes that they all get there, but she doesn't think that she's ever going to be able to get there. He finally goes back home to her house, and her little brother Remy is extremely upset with her because he's heard the news of the execution and he doesn't agree with what she's doing. And he ends up coming around, like he understands that she does it so that they can have food. Mom is...
She has a prosthetic leg.
Oh, yes. She has a prosthetic leg. And we also find out that she was in the same field that Eliana's in, and she really taught her.
Trained her to be an assassin.
Yeah. Feels bad for training her to do this, but at the same time, they obviously need it to survive. That's just kind of, you know, how it's making ends meet, especially since the mom is now not working. So it's just...
She seems to have, like, this in with the king or the ruler in her area. And he basically gives her these tasks to...
Mm-hmm.
If I'm understanding correctly, there's a rebel group. And she brings them in, and that's... Then the kingdom executes them. And that's how they make their ends meet. So she's like... It's kind of a necessary evil to make sure my family doesn't starve.
Yes. We also see, I didn't mention this the first time that we met Eliana, but we kind of circle back to it in this scene. She's like hearing screaming women.
Yes.
But Harkin wasn't hearing them in the first chapter, which was odd. But she was hearing someone scream. And then she's talking to her mom, and she's talking to her mom about how she's worried about the missing women. They say, you know, like, you know, no one from our area is getting taken, so we don't have to worry about it. But she just has this, like, weighing on her heart that all of these girls are just going missing, and there's really nothing being done about it. There's no trace for what's happening with them. So she's really worried about that.
Mm-hmm. And it's not clear where this screaming is coming from in Eliana's mind, but in the prologue with Riel and having her baby and the Mark's father... There was this added layer of, like, the angels aren't necessarily... Usually when you see angels written in a book, they're a source of light and pureness and good.
Mm-hmm.
And in this sense, they're like, a morally gray area. It seems like they're the bad guys, mm-hmm. and they're invading people's minds, because Riel's, like, kind of off her rocker in that scene.
Yeah.
So it makes you question, like, what's going on? Is this screaming really happening and Harkin just can't hear it? Or is it in her mind? We don't know.
Yes, it made me question that too, especially when Harkin couldn't hear it and she could. That mm-hmm. was like a big deal to me. But then she's like, I don't know. It's just an odd situation. Like, it seems real, but not real. She's so worried about it, and she talks to her mom about it. So that makes me think it is real. But... I don't know.
Because she keeps talking about, like, having this, like, creeping sense, like, this really, like, wrong sense and feeling like she's being watched and mm-hmm. things like that. And I can't tell what maybe inside of her and in her mind and what is actually going to be, like, around her. Or, like, is someone actually watching her and she's just getting that, like, you know, the goosebumps on your neck and mm-hmm. your hair standing up? Or is it something more sinister than that?
Yes. The next thing that we see is that she gets her next job, and it's delivered in, like, a parcel on her doorstep, and it's to hunt down the wolf, and she's going to be paid $20,000 in gold, and the other condition is that she's supposed to hunt him down. She'll get the $20,000, but she's supposed to join Invictus, which serves the Empire. It's kind of like her official joining against the rebels is from what I kind of understand what's going on.
Yeah. It seems like right now she's working with them, but in, like, a sense that she has her own agency and she's just accepting mm-hmm. what they ask her to do, and this is, like, her official, like, you will work under me and do whatever I say.
Yes, like, you're gonna officially be a part of this and have to do mm-hmm. these jobs and not really get to choose.
Right.
So she agrees, not really formally, she doesn't, like, tell anybody, but she agrees that she's gonna start hunting down the wolf and, like, starts to kind of keep her eye out for him and starts that kind of process. But that is where we end. We're jumping back to Riel now, and we're back at the Boon Chase. I don't even really exactly know where to begin. Audric's getting attacked, and she just starts using all of these powers that she has. She's pulling power from the sun. She shakes the earth. Like, she's attacking all of these people because they don't have weapons, or they weren't supposed to have weapons. And so she's just trying to do everything that she can to protect Audric, because she says Audric can't die. And we just see this just crazy scene. Like, there's just so much going on. And at one point, one of the arbiters is about to shoot Audric with an arrow, and she moves herself and her horse in the way of that, and her horse gets shot. Oh, this is awful.
Yeah, this whole scene, there's so much action happening that I almost couldn't tell what exactly was happening.
Yes, and I feel like I picked more details up when we get to, like, the trial scene than I did really in the moment of the action scene.
Yeah, because it's like boom, 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 one after another. She has this firepower, which mm-hmm. we kind of already got, like, a glimpse of when she was in, like, in one of the first chapters. They were talking about her power and how she mm-hmm. has to keep it subdued, and she's, like, not, like, one of the things about Tal and her father in that first chapter that we get to see is that they are trying to get her powers to, like, stay under control. She's not allowed to use them. She's not allowed to show anyone that she has them, because
yeah, she gets...
And she has more than one power, which apparently is not normal,
mm-hmm.
and is connected to this, like, bigger picture plot that's going on, but we don't really necessarily know at this point. It's just kind of, like, she's worried about it, and she keeps referencing this prophecy, and yes. she's scared. So this is, like, her first time being... The reason that she wanted to rebel and go into this Boon Chase is to prove to her father, like, you don't need to restrain me. I can live a normal life. I have this under control. And then she absolutely does not.
She absolutely does not, yeah.
Completely loses control. And it's because she has this, like, love and lust for Audric, because they've grown up together. And one of the things that we haven't mentioned yet is that Audric is
engaged. Yes.
To Ludivine.
Which is his cousin?
Like, yes. I was like, what is happening?
Same. I was so in shock, too. Like,
I was like, did I just read that right?
Same. I read it probably at least 3 times. I'm like, okay, we've got another Cassandra Clare in there.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I was very surprised by that. But, like, I think, like, the whole royal line, like, they got to keep royalty and stuff. But it's still shocking to me.
I was like, yeah. Maybe they're distant cousins. I don't know.
He's engaged. Another thing about Riel and her dad is that, like, during thunderstorms, he, like, locks her away and drugs yeah. her.
Yeah, it's like chapter one, abuse. And then yeah. we get to chapter two with Eliana and children are being executed. And I was like, what is happening in this book?
Yep. So there's so much going on. like, honestly, we could go on forever about all these small little details that have been mm-hmm. dropped, like, that are just beyond shocking. Like,
they're going to matter at some point, and we're going to, like, keep reading, and it's going to hit us. We're just going to be like, oh, that's what that meant.
That's why. We're in this whole scene. Her horse gets shot, and the horse ends up dying right there.
She burned it.
Yeah.
Her fire was so strong, she literally, like, melted her
horse. It said it disintegrated, or was, like, I don't know, like, not disintegrated, but it mentioned, like, it described it as if the horse was, like, melting. So,
mm-hmm.
which, I guess if you're pulling power from the sun, the fire is gonna melt things, but, ugh, it was just crazy. The horse dies. She is, like, noticing that the fire is going all around. It was, like, almost like she didn't even realize what was happening during all of this. But she notices the fire. She's, like, worried about it. And then she passes out. But, like, as she's passing out, there's a male voice in her head speaking to her.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. There's so much going on. And the end of the chapter, back to Eliana.
I think that's what makes it so confusing, is that we don't get back-to-back chapters from the same POV where yes. we'll get, like, a little bit more insight. It's like, here's this major plot point now, 1,200 years in the future.
Yep.
Like, oh, no.
Hopefully, my hope is that they eventually come together, but I guess. So, we get back to Eliana. This is a relatively short-ish chapter compared to the others, but several things go on. She goes home, and she notices that there's something wrong in her house. There's, like, the scent that she has been, like, associating with the people who have been taking the girls. So, she's beyond worried. She goes into her house and finds that her mom is missing, and I believe her prosthetic leg is still there.
Yes.
Like so obviously she was taken or left in, like, an extreme hurry. She got taken and didn't even get the opportunity to put her leg on. Ugh, just insane. And then her brother is still there. I don't think we actually get to see him, but, like, we know that he's still in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And that is when the wolf shows up. And so she immediately thinks that the wolf is responsible for taking her mom. But they get in this big tiff. They have their knives. But then he pulls a gun on her, gets her pinned. Yeah. I was shocked by that too. Which is something that I always wonder why people in fantasy books don't have guns. Especially when they're, like, more modern day. Because I'm like, you know, like, guns exist. Why are we always using knives and swords?
Yeah, so up until this point, I didn't realize that there was advanced technology for that yet.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, sword fights? Yeah.
I was surprised that a gun got pulled out, but at the same time, I was kind of like, okay, this makes sense. Because if I, in modern day situation, was going around hunting people, I would have a gun. Like, but apparently, I think guns are really expensive or rare in this time. So she's even surprised that he has a gun. He pulls a gun on her, get her attention. Like, that's where we end again. We don't really get to see, like, his motives again until we switch back to them. So, quick scene, but a lot of stuff's going on. Mom's missing. The wolf is in her house. She's not hunting the wolf. The wolf was apparently hunting her. We jump back to Riel. Yay. She wakes up from being passed out. And I think she was passed out 2 days.
Yes.
And Ludovine is there. Ludovine. And she kind of gets her up to speed a little bit. But she's very upset that Riel hasn't told her that she has all of these powers. And, like, so to me, they have a friendship dynamic going on. Obviously, there's some kind of closeness between them. So she's upset that she hasn't known about this. And she takes it a lot harder than everyone else seems to take it that she doesn't know, which is interesting to me. My guess is that she's already a little bit jealous or wary of Riel, considering that obviously there's something going on between Riel and Audric, and Ludovine is supposed to be marrying him. So that's just kind of my guess in that situation.
I would take the same way.
She tells her that 15 racers died in the race. And to me, I was wondering, like, is that 15 legitimate racers, or were that some of the Borzival people?
No, I think it makes a huge difference.
So, like, 15, like, innocent people.
Yeah.
Ugh, it was so hard. And then the prophecy gets brought up again, and Ludovine's like, you know what this means, right? Like, you're probably one of these two queens. And I'm thinking, I'm sure Riel has thought of that before, considering she's living this life. She's living it. So we get to see the prophecy, how there's going to be two queens, a sun queen and a blood queen. They're both going to have access to powers from all the elements. And one is going to be the rise of the empire, and one of them is going to be the complete destruction. She's pretty much kind of rushed away because the king is ready to talk to her. As soon as she's awake, he's been waiting to speak with her because he obviously has to give answers to all the empire who have experienced this and seen what happened. They say they can explain away a fire, but they can't explain away that 15 people died. So she is to go speak with him, and Atal and her father have already been interviewed by the king, which I'm like, oh. And then we jump back to Eliana. Surprise, surprise. And here is where I just now found out a big shocker. So she's talking to the wolf, and he's like, don't call me the wolf. Only people who are against me or something
afraid
like that.
Afraid of me.
Yeah, only people who are afraid of me call me the wolf. My name is Simon.
I just put that together.
Literally 5 minutes before we recorded, guys, I just put it together that Simon was the 8-year-old boy's name. And the wolf, his name is Simon.
Yes, yes. And we know at this point that Eliana wears a necklace that was seen originally in the prologue with Riel. So whether she's the baby or just the necklace somehow made it to her, we have no idea. There's this hint.
I did not notice that. There's so much that happened in that prologue. I've read it twice now and then went back and took notes on it, and I still don't feel like I've grasped everything in the prologue. So I missed that the necklace was from then, but I did know that it has Audric on it.
Yeah, she says it's King Audric. I'm gonna just pause here for a second and I'm gonna go back to the prologue and look, but I thought it was of Rielle. Because she says that the person riding the horse is really worn and she can't see.
Yes, she
it
can't
clearly.
See very well. They've mentioned a couple times that it's Audric, but again, then later on they say it's so worn that you can't make out his face, or like you can't make out who it is. So yeah, I definitely did not pick up that that necklace was in the past as well.
Yeah, so I, this whole time I've been like, is she the baby or is she
That's
not the
my thought.
baby?
I feel pretty confident that she is the baby, but I also feel like she's the other queen, like the either the
Right.
blood queen or the sun queen. So I don't know. It would be
That and
odd.
she like has this invincibility about her.
Yeah, she can like fall off buildings and not break bones. And Harkin's like, you gotta stop doing that. People are gonna be suspicious. But yeah, I've been thinking the whole time that she's the baby. It's been like almost zero question to me. But would the prophecy be like the Sun Queen and the Blood Queen are mother and daughter?
Right,
I
I've
don't
been
know.
so confused. Hang on, I just found the necklace. A flat gold pendant with a winged horse and flight carved onto its surface. On the horse sat a woman with streaming dark hair. Rays of sunlight fanned out behind her. Image of Clodaria during the last 2 years since the church had declared Rielle to be the Sun Queen.
So
So it's
it's
her on
Rielle.
the necklace, but they thought it was Audric this whole time.
Wait, did they just say that she was a sun queen?
They in the prologue it says that they determined she was the Sun Queen, which from what we've read so far
She's the
is
blood
like,
queen.
yeah, we think she's the Blood Queen, so we have no
According
idea
to like
who's who.
modern day, in Eliana's time, she's the blood queen.
Oh
Oh my
man.
gosh, there's
It
so
gets
much to
so
unpack.
confusing.
Oh my gosh. I kind of figured though, like when we end, like, well, I guess we can talk about it in a minute. I don't want to get too ahead of ourselves, but
Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely.
okay, so we have the necklace. She thinks it's Audric, but it's really Rielle. Oh, everything's like so tied together, but not. Like, there's so many missing pieces in this.
Because also in the original prologue chapter, Simon was just trying to go from place A to place B within the same time frame, and now we're 1,000 years in the future. So if it is the same person, that means that he was so powerful that when he tried to go from, like, in a linear time frame from one place to the next, he misjudged seriously and ended up in the future.
But the baby got ripped away from him. So like what if he's in like this like I'm just picturing it like this black like time traveling thing, you know? And like he's going to Borzival, but the baby gets ripped from him and gets taken in the
Like
time
sucked
zone
to the future.
forward, but he ends up in current day or in past day Borzival, and like over the book, I'm just imagining that he's like having to get to the future to try and get to the baby again. That's in my mind what's gonna happen. Like he's not going to the future too. I think he's gonna be in the past. The baby's gonna be in the future, and his like storyline is gonna be him trying to find her in whatever time period she's in. That's just my
Yeah,
thought.
maybe.
I
Maybe,
don't
yeah,
know.
definitely.
Who knows? There's so many possibilities. So she agrees that they're all gonna go with him on his mission, and so that she can get her mom back. We jump to Riel. And we're in with King Bastian, I think is how his name is said. And he is questioning her. He asks her all kinds of questions like, how long have you known that you've had these powers? What powers do you have? What can you do? And we find out that she's known since she was 5, and that's because she got in an argument with her mom and caught the house on fire, and ultimately ended up, it killed her mom because the mom got stuck inside this fire. And so they've known since then and hid it since then.
Yeah.
Which is sad and tragic and just insane. And I can't imagine, like, the dad is obviously not a good guy, but at the same time, like, just imagining your wife being killed by your kid and,
Right.
like, just that fear of that happening again and, like, getting someone that you love, like, ripped away from you by someone else that you love, like, they would just create a whole hard situation.
Right, it's this whole, forgive me for this, but Frozen dynamic where they're scared and they're fearful of her powers, and instead of trying to learn them to master them, they just force her to, like, hide. Mm-hmm. And it's just going to make it so much worse.
I didn't even think of that comparison, but that honestly is a great comparison, like, to what's going on. They ask her, like, all kinds of questions, like, if there was a lake or a river nearby, could you have flooded the earth? And she's like, yeah, like, I feel like I could. And they ask her, like, does she enjoy doing it? And, like, obviously there's an understanding of magic in this world. It's very common, but it's not common for everyone to have access to every power. So she says, like, yes, it's enjoyable, just like everyone else enjoys using their power. Like, I can't help it that unfortunately I'm super powerful.
Yeah.
We then go to Eliana, and we get some stories of the Sun Queen and the Blood Queen, and how there was, like, this festival and a pageant every year, and they, like, praise the Sun Queen, and they, like, her light, they, like, praise her light, and that she's gonna bring good things around. And her father is in the military of some kind, and he's off in war, and they go to this festival, and they pray that their dad's gonna come back every year, until eventually he doesn't, which is also sad. Everyone's parents are dead. Everyone. This book
is very tragic, just yes, from the get-go. Is.
And then we also see, like, a little sneak peek about how they say, like, Queen Riel ruined everything. Like, it's just crazy, because I really like Riel so far. But I'm just so interested to see, like, what really happens and, like, how that plays out. But, so we get some few stories about the Sun Queen and the Blood Queen. We know that they refer to Riel as the Blood Queen, and that she's assumed to be the Blood Queen at this point, according to modern day. And the wolf, aka Simon, takes them to a party at Lord, I don't even know, Arcleon. At Lord Arcleon's palace. And a lot goes on here too that I'm not 100% sure what's happening again.
So there's these Adatrox, is how I believe they say it. And the way she describes it is almost like, so they're human, but it's like they are blank. Like, there's just kind of like this darkness behind their eyes, and not like, it's not like lively. It's not like these men are just evil men. It's like there's something almost controlling their actions in a way. And she, earlier in one of the chapters, describes it as, like, one moment they could be acting completely normal like humans, and the next it's almost like these weird, like, zombie-like reactions.
Like, under control.
Yeah, very, like, stilted and not natural. So they come across that in, this is, like, a castle, I think. It's, like, a, maybe I'm just imagining it as a castle, but.
Well, yeah, I think they say it's his palace, so it has to be some kind of big castle.
Yeah.
But it's modernish day, so, you know, some big mansion castle kind of thing.
And the girl that they're going into, they call them, they call it a maiden house, which I think is just a very nice way to put, I don't know another nice way to put it. Women who work in pleasure? Yeah, because they use the W word, and I was like, oh, because I, at first I was like, oh, they're servants, and then they said that, and I was like, oh, they're not.
They're not
in that manner. But yeah, they're basically, they have to fight all these Adatroxes that are essentially just like the military in the house.
Yeah, so they're like fighting them, and like within that fight, we meet, she's one of these servants and her name's Navi. And then her and Navi are like walking out on this like balcony kind of thing towards the wolf. And there's another person there.
I cannot pronounce his name.
Nope. Rozival?
That's how I've been saying it. Rozival, he is essentially like the main man in the Invictus, which is Lord. Is that how we're saying his name? That's his little groupie against the rebels.
I definitely was confused at the end of this chapter, because the first time I read it, like, I had to go back and read the page again, but the first time I read it, I thought there was only one person. I thought it was just Navi. And then she was, like, in shock about Rozival. I was a little bit confused about what was going on here. And I feel like I'll get more answers in chapter 13 or chapter 12. But,
yeah,
I didn't exactly understand what was going on. But we have some new characters in play, apparently.
he's the one that sent her the job mission with 20,000 gold. Because she was like, oh, now we'll officially be part of the Invictus. So when he showed up in that chapter, I was like, oh, she got caught.
Okay, so she's like, she's got him head of Invictus and the wolf are in one spot, and she's there, so she's like stuck in this like, oh my gosh, like situation. Okay, that makes more sense now.
Yeah.
Okay,
That's
and
just
then
where we're at with that one.
yeah, that ends with that's all we get to see of Eliana for the first week of discussion. And then we jumped to Riel and they're on like a recess, like a lunch break. Divine and Audric pull her over to the side. They're like talking to her about what's going on. And she gets informed that she's gonna have to go through a set of trials to decide whether she's the Blood Queen or the Sun Queen. And if she's the Blood Queen, they're gonna kill her.
Yep.
So, bum, bum, bum. It was just a lot. Very shocking, but to be expected at the same time. Like, if they have this prophecy that one of them's going to ruin the world, obviously they're going to do something about it or try to do something about it. So,
right, yeah.
That's where we end. So,
big shocker.
What are your thoughts after this week?
Oh my gosh. So, I read the first 12 chapters or 11 chapters literally in 2 days. And at first, I was very much on the same page as you. You had warned me, like, I think the first 2 chapters are very confusing.
Mm-hmm.
I read the prologue and I was like, this isn't confusing. Is it a little weird? Yeah, but it's not confusing. And then I read chapters 1 and 2 and was like, okay. Info dump world building is off the charts insane. Like, everyone mm-hmm. warned me when I read Crescent City by Sarah J. Maas, like, that book has heavy world building. And when I read it, I was like, no, this makes a lot of sense. Like, is it a lot? Yeah, but I follow. This mm-hmm. book, I did not follow until we got, like, 6 chapters in. And then I was like, starting to piece things together.
Yeah,
so
like,
first
slowly things started to make sense, but I swear the very first few chapters I was like, there is no way, and especially because it was my second time to read it and I still didn't understand what was going on.
Yeah, it's just, I think more for me, I understood the magic system and what was happening there. I didn't understand the geography.
Mm-hmm.
So they kept on mentioning all these places, and then we were getting the 2 different POVs, and I couldn't tell if they were in the same place, different. I knew it was different time, but like, were they in different lands from each other? Or are they in the same land as each other? It took me a hot second to figure that out. So I was a little bit worried starting it off, and I didn't like Eliana at first, like you said earlier.
Mm-hmm.
I very much favored Riel's chapters, and so I was like, oh man, like, this is gonna be rough if I don't like one of the other main characters. But when the wolf gets introduced, there's some banter there,
mm-hmm.
and that's really when Eliana's chapter started to pick up for me. So far, I'm actually really enjoying it.
I'm enjoying it too. I, at this point, I'm excited to keep reading, and I still favor Riel. I'm sorry, Eliana's just not my favorite character at this point, and I would much rather, like, I get through Eliana's chapters so that I can go read Riel's chapters. But, you know, I feel like she is getting better over time, and I think she'll continue to, but I completely agree with everything that you said. Like, it was a little confusing at first, but at least we're, like, slowly getting more information to where those chapters are making more sense, and it's not just left, like, confusing.
Yeah.
The pacing so far has kind of bounced a little bit for me. Like, at first I felt like it was like bam 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 bam, like so fast that it was confusing, and then now it's like steadied out and I feel like the pacing's good. I still feel like I like the pacing in Riel's chapters more. I feel like Eliana's pacing is a little bit slower. It's taken us like several chapters to really get into what's going on with her, whereas Riel, like, we pretty fast got into her story and like felt a connection to her.
Mm-hmm.
But so there's really not a solid, like, continuous pacing with it. It's kind of bouncing a little bit as far as the pacing goes, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I agree. At first there's so much happening that you're like, what is going on? And then I don't know if it's slowed down so much as I just am starting to understand it better
mm-hmm.
and read at that pace a little bit better.
Yeah.
I will say anytime that there's like an intense action scene, the pacing gets thrown off because it's the way she writes the action scenes, it's descriptive almost into like a fault. And
yeah.
She's like, you know every movement, but not in a good enough way to start seeing the movement as this, like, graceful fight. It's like, 1 second there's a sword, the next second someone's dead. What is going on?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially when Riel is, like, using all of her powers at once, and, like, everything is going on, and the horse, and Audric, and, like, you have so much going on. And not until they, like, kind of slowly step through a few things that happened in the trial did I understand really everything that happened during that scene. But it is so fast but still so detailed, like, it's a lot. In those actions,
there was like 4 times during that scene that I thought her horse had fallen and
mm-hmm.
she was like on the ground, and then it was like all of a sudden they were racing even faster, and I was like, okay, so she's still on the horse, like, I'm trying to figure out.
Well, we kind of have already talked about characters that we love so far. Any other characters besides our two main characters that we've kind of harped on a little bit that you're liking right now?
Yeah, I would say the wolf is definitely a solid. Simon is a solid addition. In Eliana's chapters, because Harkin doesn't give me much personality. He just kind of seems like this hollow man who's just like he's got some deep trauma living in his dead family's house and like will not enter the house, only enters through his bedroom window.
Window, yeah, crawls through the window into his
Yeah.
own home.
Like literally hasn't opened the door to the rest of his house.
I
So.
like the wolf, and since the realization of realizing that he's Simon, I think I'm gonna like him a lot more because that just adds a whole nother level to him. Like, we know a little bit more of his past now and know that he's half a freaking angel. Like, why is he using a gun? I'm interested to find out more about him, and like, obviously I want to know like how he ended up in the future too, if he traveled with the baby. There's so much to find out about him. So I do really like him, and I like Audric a lot right now too.
Yes, I would agree with that. Pretty much everyone in Rielle's chapters, apart from her father and Tal, is like a good addition.
I am sad though to find out that Audric's gonna die in the next 2 years.
Or does he?
Well, yeah, does he? I think he will die, but I don't think that Riel murdered him. I can't believe that she murdered him at this point, but that's what they say. They're like, Queen Riel murdered King Audric. I don't believe that quite yet, but I think he might be dead, but maybe not. There's a whole book called Lightbringer, so
Lightbringer. Yeah.
yeah, maybe he's not dead.
I think maybe, yeah, I don't know. I'm not convinced. Maybe it's one of those situations where it was easier to say like I killed the king, and let them believe that for a better chance at survival later on. Like maybe he time traveled.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, obviously there's a time traveling situation here, so it's possible that he's in a different timeline as well. Like, he could be
Yeah.
in the future, he could be in the past, he could be any which way. Like, who knows where he is?
So much
Yeah,
happening.
so
But
much.
Riel's also like in that first prologue or preface chapter, she's crazy. Like she is not making any sense. So like there's a part of me that believes that she might have been capable of killing him. Like might have just like really went off the walls one day.
Yeah, I think maybe I am being I'm having some false hope in Riel because I like her so much that I don't want to believe that she's the Blood Queen, like ruins the world. I like her character so much. I'm hoping. I'm like, nope, she's the Sun Queen. She's the good one. We love
Or maybe
her.
they're reading the prophecy incorrectly
It's
because they say
true.
there's in that chapter about her having to do the trials, which if I'm not mistaken that is chapter 11. They say like the interpretations of the prophecy and like there's a modern interpretation which is that the Blood Queen will bring the destruction of the world and the Sun Queen will save them. Yeah. I was like if there's more than one, why put it out there that there's more than one interpretation?
It's true. Ah.
Makes me
I'm
question
so intrigued.
things.
I just want to read all of Riel's chapters. I'm going to be upset if we get to the end of this book and we don't get answers and I have to keep reading the other books. Not that I don't want to read the other ones. I just want to know what happens. Okay,
Yeah, I understand.
does this remind you of anything that you've read before?
Yes, it does.
I'd love to hear about it.
I have not finished the series, and if I understand correctly, I don't believe you have read this series, but Throne of Glass.
Nope, I've only read the first book so far.
One, when I started reading this, I had just finished A Court of Silver Flames by Sarah J. Maas, and her writing is just unparalleled. Her worlds are just so different. So to go from her writing to a new author is a little bit of a shock at first, and so I can't tell if I'm reading too heavily into what I'm getting in this book or if Claire has pulled some inspiration from Throne of Glass because she uses the word fleet-footed a lot, and I've never heard that in my life, and that's a pet's name in Throne of Glass. Eliana, we know that she's like a bounty hunter assassin type lady, follows very closely to the narrative of Selena from Throne of Glass, who is literally an assassin. When I started to read Eliana, and Eliana has this sense of like she's arrogant. Like, she really, at one point she says, like, I wish I could sit back and watch myself fight because it looks badass. And I was like, okay.
Okay, calm you're down. Feeling you're yourself.
Go, you're about to go kill people. Like, can you take it down a notch?
Yeah. And, so, I agree. There are definitely some similarities, like, in the trial situation and, like, in the first Throne of Glass book, how she has to, like, compete against everyone, and now Riel's gonna have to go through these trials. Like, I feel you there.
Yeah, definitely. So, it's just, it's interesting. I know Eliana's character is just coming from a place of, like, I have to kill people to survive, and the only way I'm gonna get through that is by putting on this, like, false, like, confidence about it, because if I don't, if I take all that to heart, then it's just gonna destroy me.
Mm-hmm.
So I know where it's coming from, but just every part of me is like, this is literally Selena.
It's so funny that we're both in, well, you finished Court of Silver Flames this week. I'm reading A Court of Wings and Ruin this week. So we're both going through from Sarah J. Maas to this book at the same time.
Yeah, it's gonna be, it's interesting because this book has a lot of things that you've seen. I know you haven't read a lot of fantasy, but from my understanding of how much fantasy I've read in my life, which I wouldn't say is like a lot, because there was a time in my life where I really focused on school and wasn't reading books on a weekly basis, but there are a lot of components in this story that are in other fantasy worlds, but there's like so much more in this one. It's like, mm-hmm. she just like really packed it all in there. And the angels is so fascinating, because in Riel's story, they say that like the angels are like locked away behind this like wall, and they'll never bring destruction again or something along those lines. And like, that's the whole worry about her being the Blood Queen, is like, oh, you're gonna like bring down this wall and release destruction on us. In the future, we have no idea what's going on. It's just all of a sudden there's an empire, and you're like, excuse me, where did you come from?
What? And the series is called Imperium, right? I think.
Yes, it's the Imperium trilogy.
So yeah, there's definitely going to be some interesting things that are going to come about from this. So I know we've kind of talked about some quotes already, but any quotes that we've not mentioned that you feel like we've got to talk about?
There are none that like really stick out to me that are like, this is an amazing quote.
Yeah.
But there was little things that I saw over and over again. Let's see. I liked when Riel in one of the first chapters was like, Audric's mine. She just like claimed it.
But he's not. I mean, but he will be, apparently. But he's not right now.
Yeah.
Poor Ludivine. Like, she's gonna have, obviously, she's gonna have her fiancé taken away from her. And her being a queen's gonna get taken away from her, which is a big deal, too. Like, her future is going to be, like, extremely altered.
So, do you think she's gonna die? Or do you think she's gonna have, like, this is her backstory to become a villain?
Oh, no. I didn't really think either. I didn't really think that she was going to become a villain, and I really didn't consider that she was going to die. I figured she was just going to be this tragic, sad, but I can definitely see how this could lead to her being a villain. But she seems so, like, quiet, you know, kind of, like, reserved. It seems like it's going to be more tragic to me, but I don't know. She could surprise me and not surprise you, obviously, because you're already plotting her as a villain.
I loved when the wolf called Eliana Little Dread. I was just like,
she's like, if you call me little, if you call me little one more time, I'm gonna punch you in the face. I like all of the like little tidbits that we get to see of Eliana's point of view, where she has this picture in her mind of Riel just being the worst, like she ruined everything, they hate the Blood Queen, like all of this. I'm so intrigued by all of these scenes and hearing her perspective. One, because I think that she's her mother, but so that's extremely interesting to me. Also, just because it's obvious that even 1,000 years later, the impact that this one person, it seems like to me, like a lot of our modern day things, like any people that we really focus on are not 1,000 years back.
Right.
There are some, but it just seems like that she has to do something massive and huge to be a topic of conversation in Eliana's mind so frequently, like that she keeps continually being brought up. So it's just surprising to me how relevant Riel and Audric still are in this future modern day world.
Yeah, and they even say, they kind of talk about them. So in Riel's chapters, they mention like the saints. Like they keep mentioning the saints, and they're like godlike figures. Like they're not with them, like amongst them in the world. But then in Eliana's chapters, they talk about Riel and Audric in the same manner. Like they were like some like godlike people in their history. And I just think it's so interesting because we know that they weren't. They're humans in the world. And
yeah, and the magic system isn't the same in the modern day as it was in the past. In the past, they all have magic, and in the present day, they don't. Like, it's, like, non-existent, except for, obviously, Eliana can fall off a building and not hurt herself, but for some reason, they're not putting two and two together that that's magic. That's just shocking to me that they know of the magic system, and they're not, like, what's going on here?
Like,
yeah. I don't know.
It's just... there's such a disconnect between the two, because in the first you hear about, like, oh, the angels, we don't know a lot about them, but we know that they're not great, that they're scared of them, that they're, like, safely on the other side of the wall. And then in Eliana's chapters, there's, like, no mention of the angels.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, what happened? Because if we were to believe that Riel was really the Blood Queen, and that she killed King Audric and brought down the fall of, you know, that type of, you know, empire, if you will, of their time, then what happened to the angels between then and now?
Yeah, and, like, Eliana still knows of the Sun Queen, but we've got no information about the Sun Queen either. Like,
right.
Like, there's no, the Sun Queen came and saved everything, and that's why we're back to normal. Like, that's not the conversation that's going on.
I'm also still skeptical about Eliana even being, like, Riel's baby. Or the Sun Queen.
So, in reality, even though it's a long book and we've covered a lot, a quarter of the book is not very far to have any answers of any kind to understand what's going on. So, no. I don't know. I'm skeptical, but...
I just feel like it's weird that because we have a little brother and a mother in the picture...
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, she talked about her dad in that one scene where they were talking about, like, the like, festival they would go to honor the queens. Why there's never a comparison of, like, she looks so different to her brother, or she doesn't have her mother's features. Because usually when it's like a, the person doesn't know their adopted situation, there's usually some sort of like foreshadow of like, oh, well, my brother looks nothing like me. And so far all we've gotten is that like Remy's just a little bit paler.
Yeah. And, but the mom is now missing out of the situation, which to me helps lean on my side of it, because any, like, revelations that she's going to be coming to right now in these scenes where we're obviously going to get character development in her and we're going to find out things, that's just how book characters work, she's not going to be able to ask her mom any questions. So to me, it's convenient that her mom is missing in this time where she's probably, if she was the baby, this is me presuming that she's the baby, when she comes to this realization that she might not be her parents' kid, she has no one to ask. And so that leans on why I'm thinking my way maybe a little bit. But I love that we're thinking differently, because it's going to make for great conversation as the book continues on.
Yeah. And I'm always up for being shocked in a book. Like, you're right. Yes. We're only 120 pages in. There is so much. It's a 500-page book. There's so much more to discover and uncover.
I love when they're not predictable. Like, if from the start we're like, yeah, that's exactly what's going to happen, and we agree on everything, then that's probably what's going to happen, and it's not going to be interesting. So,
right.
I'm excited.
I just love that as we were discussing this, we were like, oh, like, connecting, like, major dots.
I know, because when two people read things, we're obviously going to pick up on two different things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, like, little details that you saw, I might not have saw, details that I'm going to see, you're not going to see. Like, it's just so fun buddy reading. It just is.
it really is. I think I'm going to change my tabbing system, because right now I have, like, OMG moments, favorite quotes, and, like, things I want to discuss with you. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm going to add a tab that's like, I think this is foreshadowing or connected.
Yeah. Proof for my point, and alpha proof for my point. We'll hash it out next week. Just kidding. But really, what do you think is foreshadowing? What do I think is foreshadowing? It's fun when we can take the same situation and think two different things, especially when Simon's time traveling. You think that he went to the future with this baby, right? That the whole powerful situation went wrong and they both went forward, and I think they got separated, but we read the exact same thing. Like,
I'm very excited. I was a little bit worried in the beginning, but now that I've finished those first 120 pages and we've had this conversation, I'm feeling so much more excited to pick this book back up and keep going and, like, trying to find all these, like, little hidden details that Tara's, like, dropped for us.
Yes. Yes. All right. Any OMG moments? I feel like I really didn't have a ton because there was so much going on until 5 minutes before, and I put together that Simon was the wolf. Ah, that is definitely my OMG moment.
Yeah, I would have to, that and the necklace for me was just like, oh my god, she has the necklace, like that. Because at first it was just like, oh, Eliana's this random person in the future. Mm-hmm. And then she's like, I have this necklace of King Ardric, but we had already seen the necklace. So I was like, I know exactly what that is, which makes me think that you're connected to their timeline.
I wish that I had picked up on that detail. I just took the necklace being like, she just felt like she had a connection to these people. Like, you know, like, I don't know why I like stars. And then their mom's like, you know what I mean? Like, have you seen, this is an awful connection, but have you seen Twitches? Yeah. With Tia and Tamara in it, and they like, yes, one loves the sun and one loves the moon, and their mom has the sun and the moon necklace, you know?
Yes.
Okay, look, these people are in the future too. Maybe the author's seen Twitches, because I feel
she's
like
I'm gonna take Twitches and do it better.
Yeah. Okay, I mean, I kind of am seeing the similarities here. Just kidding, but I mean, there's a few things, but yeah,
so
I don't know.
Do you think from that prologue chapter that Audric is the father?
I do. I mean, I could be wrong here, but I do, because she like has like one little line where she's like, Audric would have loved her. Right. And they're all like, well, you killed him. Too bad. But that would have meant that he died extremely recently. But
right,
it's only a 2-year period that all of this is happening. So 9 months, him dying 9 months ago within a 2-year period is not that big of a shock. Like, mm-hmm, it seems like it could have happened.
Corian, who I'm assuming is an angel, is working his way into their minds, and he has seen that the baby is there, and he has seen Garver, who's Simon's father.
So Corian's working in their minds. So is Corian the one that's talking to her in 2 years earlier? Is he the voice that she's hearing?
I don't know. I've pulled back open my book because obviously now that we're talking about it, we are putting together so many more dots than we both originally had gotten. But I would argue that yes, he's probably the voice she's hearing, because mm-hmm, it seems like he might have, because she says, my daughter, Riel's voice was hollow. I think Corian will kill her, or he'll try to. I think that he's like using her as like a puppet.
This is so interesting. We've got so much to find out.
No, because if in Riel's chapters she goes through the trials and she's deemed the Sun Queen,
mm-hmm,
which at one point I think it's referenced that she's the Sun Queen.
That's my presumption. Otherwise she wouldn't be able to be with Audric. I don't know. I assume that they're going to think she's the Sun Queen at the start.
If they think she's the Sun Queen because she was able to prove her worth during the trials and prove that she was able to control her powers, they deemed her the Sun Queen, she would have had to have control over herself. But for her to have, one, an angel in her mind and an angel walking into the scene at the end of the prologue,
mm-hmm,
that means that the wall had to have come down at some point. And then the future, they reference her as the Blood Queen. It makes me think that it's not her own actions. That she's being manipulated.
That is so interesting.
Because yeah. I don't think Riel's bad, right? Like, in that scene where she's like, I'll, you know, the last chapter, she's like, I'll do the trials, I'll prove my worth.
Yeah, like, I don't want to believe that Riel's bad. I don't want to believe that at all. At least that's what the author's making me want to believe, obviously. She's wanting us to like Riel at this point.
I can honestly see why the book has a lot of hype now that we've talked about all these things, because at first I was like, the writing's not anything, it's not bad by any means, but it's not like spectacular writing.
Mm-hmm.
And so then, but now looking back on it and being like, oh, like, what about this, and what about this theory and this plot, and how are these two timelines connected, and what do you think this means? That's what makes it really good, because you could sit here forever and talk about it.
We could, like, I swear we could sit here and continue to like try and tie the strings together. And we've literally only read a quarter of the book, and a quarter of one book out of a trilogy. Like, oh, I'm just so intrigued. I can't wait to figure out what happens.
I know. And they referenced, I know you brought this up earlier, they referenced Lightbringer and Kingsbane within that prologue, which are the two titles of the other books.
Okay, well, I think that's where we'll end then for this week, even though I do feel like we could continue on forever. For next week, we're going to read up to chapter 40, and I guess we'll see what happens, see if we get any more strings tied together.
Yes, hopefully. Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
That's it for today's episode of Judge a Book. If you enjoyed, please make sure to give us a 5-star review before you go. Connect with me on social media. They're all linked in the pod description. And don't forget, next Monday, a new episode of Book Club will be released, and we can once again judge a book.